Good morning. You're listening to FloorDaily.net, and I'm Kemp Haar. This morning, our guest is Mark Johnson, who's the National Sales Director at Tate Access Floors. Mark, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Kemp. Thank you.
I'm glad you could be with us. I thought it'd be very interesting, since you and I were with each other a couple of weeks ago, for us to do a little interview and tell our listeners what we were talking about. I had met you in Minneapolis to tour a new LEED Platinum building that had raised access flooring all the way throughout. And so I was asking you some questions about, you know, market penetration. And so I want to get into some of that. But before we do that, why don't we talk real quickly a little bit about Tate? Why don't you tell us what you can about Tate Access Floors?
Sure. Tate Access Floors is a manufacturer of access flooring products. That's all we do and have been doing it since 1961. They are headquartered in Jessup, Maryland, and have manufacturing facilities in Red Lion, Pennsylvania, as well as in Jessup, Maryland. And our primary focus is North America, but we do have an international division as well and do pretty much work across the world in many places.
And you're actually the market leader, aren't you?
We are, for sure. We are in North America. We have significant market share over competitors. The rest of the world, there's many, many, many manufacturers, which is kind of a reflection of the popularity of raised flooring throughout the rest of the world. In North America, it isn't as popular as places like Europe, UK, Far East, South Africa, but that's clearly our goal here is to increase the awareness and as a result, the use of raised flooring in commercial office buildings and other building sectors in North America. It's kind of the last frontier, you might say, and that's our whole focus is educating people on why to do it, the benefits of doing it.
But actually, it's been picking up a little bit lately. I think if you look at the history, which got started in this late 60s or so, it moved along fairly slowly and has actually reached, about 12% penetration now?
That's a good number. We look at what is sold on an annual basis in North America in terms of, you know, access flooring products for a commercial office application. And we compare that to what Dodge McGraw-Hill puts out on an annual basis of new construction starts of commercial office buildings. So we try to match up those two different numbers. And we take the square footage that the industry sold, we divide it into the amount of new construction that McGraw-Hill said was going to be built, and that gives us a percentage, and that is this past year about 12% of commercial office space new. Initially, you know, our business was 100% data center environment, and in those rooms it was used for cable management as well as cooling for the equipment. And in the late 70s, early 80s, you started to see a little bit of use of raised flooring in office buildings. And into the 80s, you saw it for cable only. And what really started that was the GSA, is our government, biggest landlord in the country. They did a study and evaluated all the different methods of how to distribute cabling throughout an office building. The result of that study was the best way was to use access flooring with modular wiring and non-electrified systems furniture, and that was the best value in terms of first cost and life cycle cost, and that decision was based a lot on flexibility and the ability to churn office space. And throughout the 80s and 90s, we did primarily that type of application, cable only. In the late 90s in North America, we started to see the addition of using that floor space as an air plenum. Now we're going to put air conditioning, conditioned air, under the raised floor in that commercial office environment and bring it out of the floor and condition the space. And in really late 1999, to kind of quantify that, we surveyed our project list, which is, you know, hundreds if not thousands of jobs that are 20,000 square feet or bigger. And about 1% of the projects in 99 was using the cavity under the raised floor for air distribution. In 2008, we'd seen that grow to 60% of the projects on our list using the cavity for air distribution. And the reason that that's popular and gaining in usage is it does many things. Using air under the floor, bringing it out of the floor, can improve indoor air quality, does improve comfort. You still have the flexibility to reconfigure, which is why we started doing raised floor in office space to begin with, the GSA study. And it can provide you energy savings. So it's a technology that really has multiple benefits. With the increase in desire to design and build more environmentally responsible buildings, the whole green building movement, it's a very popular strategy to help in achieving that, you know, things like improving indoor air quality, comfort, energy savings. So that's fueled the use of raised floor for air distribution on top of the cable-only benefit already, and you put those two things together, it has affected our industry and the growth of our industry. You know, not hugely significantly at this point in time, but we believe it's going to now rapidly increase with this, you know, desire to do more environmental responsible design.
Well, let me just summarize some things I learned, just to reiterate what you were saying. With this underfloor air, you're able to put more comfortable air more efficiently around the workspace where people are actually working in the building. And you can also add, thanks to the sensors and everything, you can add fresh air, whereas a more traditional office space is trying to push forced air down from the ceiling and also recycle or pull that air back up to the ceiling. It's just not as efficient. That's one huge benefit. Plus, you know, since the air is coming out closer to the individual, it's easier for them to control whether or not it's blowing on them or whether or not it's just comfortable air around them. But there's also this whole light thing. You're able to, when you don't have all that duct work and all that insulation and everything up in the ceiling, you're able to allow for larger glass panels, if you will, so that more light can move through the space, right?
Yeah, that's correct. That would be another benefit that we do educate people on. And the reason being, you can, if you looked at conventional building design, you know, a slab to slab height of 13 feet is as good a number as any.
Uh-huh. Standard.
And quite often people are looking for 9-foot ceilings at least. So you have this 4-foot space above the drop ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
And that space, you know, has your structure, your building structure of the slab above. It has your HVAC distribution, which conventional would be ducted.
Yeah.
It's got plumbing, it's got lights, it's got power, it's got cabling. Everything's been traditionally up in that space. If you took that 4-foot space, you could pretty much figure 12 inches, 14 inches of it as structure. And then under that structure, we have at least a 24-inch zone of ductwork. When you go raise flooring, we eliminate a significant amount of that horizontal distribution of ductwork. And we're replacing that with a 12, 14, 16-inch raised floor.
Mm-hmm.
So minimum 24 inches overhead, very possibly 30-inch zone, gets replaced by a 12 to 18-inch zone.
Underneath.
So you have a delta there, 6 inches, 12 inches. Every building is certainly different. You have that delta, and you have really two things to decide on. Do I want to build a shorter building and save the resources of every vertical element in that building, from facade to steel to all the plumbing and risers, everything in the core? So if I'm building a three-story building, I could potentially save, you know, 18 to 36 inches of material. Or what we're seeing in the low-rise building is, I would say, it's fair to say, I'm seeing more of people are deciding not to save that 18 to 36 inches of material and increase the ceiling height. So now I might go 10-foot ceilings. By doing that, I now can increase my glazing at the perimeter,
mm-hmm.
which allows me to bring in more daylight, more views, and that is very desirable. That whole indoor environmental quality is very desirable, because that's the part of the building and design where you start affecting the people and how they feel and how they perform. And when you look at people as a cost of the building. There's all kinds of pie charts out there what that is, but it's by far the biggest cost sitting within that building, including the building itself.
All right, let's talk real quick about the global market for a second. You've told us the advantages of raised access flooring, and the one that some people may not have known about was the ability to move the climate control system through the floor and the ability to save this amount of space. But when we start looking at Europe and the, I guess, per capita usage of flooring, it's actually much more accepted in Europe and in Asia. Is that right?
That's correct. That's a correct statement as well. Mm-hmm. We try to track that the best of our ability, and we know, and we've known for a long time, that Europe and the Far East are raised floors far more prevalent. To put that into perspective, we talked about over here where we have this 12% plus or minus penetration rate.
Right.
In the UK, Europe, I've heard 60 to 70% would be the penetration rate over there in their buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And when you go to the Far East, Japan, we've heard it's, might as well call it 100%. China is very, as it develops, very popular market for raised floor. The Middle East, as it develops, and India, very popular raised floor markets. South Africa is really where, you know, modern-day underfloor air distribution under an access floor started, probably.
Can you explain why America is only 12 when all these other countries are so much higher?
I would, you know, I think culture comes into it to a certain degree, but over in those other places, Japan, for example, the lack of development space and buildings being very tall, the density that they're accustomed to working in, density of people per square foot, is very, very tight. I mean, they, you know, there's not private office environment, there's not spacious cubicle environments. They pack it with people, and the only way you can get all your services to those people is effectively under floor. And Europe, to a certain degree like that, not as densely packed as the Far East, but Europe, you know, energy, for example, has been a big concern over there for a long time. You know, the cost of energy has been high in Europe for a long time. So energy savings strategies like doing raised floor, underfloor air have been popular earlier over there because they had to be. Over here, we haven't really been concerned about it until the last 10 years, and especially the last few years. We had very spacious cubicle environments. We have lots of private office. We didn't have a need to. We didn't have codes that address those things to the degree like they have in Europe. In Europe, you have smaller, less players. You have less design firms, less developers, less contractors. So it's easier to educate and influence a smaller market than it is, you know, a country like U.S.
Okay.
You know, and it's all about education, and we're seeing that now happen, and, you know, things have changed in recent times.
Let's wrap up with the education thing real quick. Let's say somebody's interested in looking more strongly at raised access flooring. Can you give me a handle on, generally, what is the incremental cost for doing raised access flooring versus not doing it?
Okay. Today, an access floor general office environment number furnished and installed around the country, budget-wise, probably $8 a square foot's a good number.
Okay.
There's your first cost, but now what do you do differently in the building with raised floor? And one of the, you know, places you would go, that building height. Do I want to save money on the building height? Sheet metal. I don't have 70-80% of the sheet metal now. That's a savings. Yeah. Cable savings, power savings, furniture savings. And when you do an integrated design and integrated budget estimate in that fashion, you'll find the first cost premium, if any, with raised floor, might be a dollar or two a square foot, and I've seen it go the other way. I've seen studies where there was a savings first cost by doing it, and you've seen a dollar or two a square foot first cost premium.
And if copper keeps, it may be a price advantage because you don't have to run wiring up and down the walls.
That's right, yeah. And that's definitely a line item on these estimates as well. Yeah. And then, you know, when you go to the life cycle cost benefits now, you know, even if there is a first cost premium,
yeah,
you'd typically see a payback 1 to 2 years.
Right. Okay. Well, we're about to run out of time. I was going to just make a quick point. Didn't you tell me that the last three buildings built in New York City were, the last three high-rises were all three raised access flooring? Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah. There's first one recently completed, New York Times headquarters building. The one that's just wrapping up, One Bryant Park, Bank of America Tower. And the third one under construction right now, Goldman Sachs World Headquarters Building. Always a user of access floors. This is their first project, North America, to my knowledge, where they're incorporating the air under it as well and taking full advantage. So
Okay. It's
a good example of what can happen in a market and market change.
All right. Well, Mark, I did want to make sure that our listeners knew what was going on with access flooring. So we've been talking to Mark Johnson, who's the National Sales Director with Tate Access Floors, and you've been listening to Kemp Haar and FloorDaily.net.